Accession number 14974, Paul Armstrong, reel 19.
Mr. Armstrong, reel 19. What happened next, Mr. Armstrong?
Well, at this time, you can imagine that the war was beginning to speed up. It was obvious that we were going to have to make a move to invade, and therefore all sorts of extra works were being carried out. For instance, the Americans were arriving then. There wasn't the accommodation for, there were so many, there wasn't the accommodation, so we were sent out to build camps for the Americans. Fortunately, a lot of equipment had been assembled, and for instance, I built one at Liscard in Cornwall. Now, this was early December. The weather was pretty horrid. I'm sorry to say, I always found it in Cornwall. And I went out with my, I think that I was allowed 30 men altogether, and I was given 6 weeks to build this camp. And the equipment was delivered. We had the advantage of labouring was done by the Pioneer Corps, who were nearby, helping other engineers all over Cornwall. We started this work, but we were hampered by dreadful weather. It rained continually, and my chaps were pretty brassed off. And I remember one coming to me and complaining, and I said, well, I'm sorry, I can do nothing, but the colonel will be around next week. And another man came and also asked if he could put a complaint in, and I said, yes, with pleasure. Knowing my colonel.
What were they complaining about?
The wet and the cold. The wet was really appalling, but it was urgent that those camps be built. These people were crossing the Atlantic and something had to be done, and it was a case of needs must. So when my colonel arrived, I told him that there were two sappers wanting an interview. And the first one was marched in and told his story, that he was soaked to the skin. And the colonel said, there's one thing about being soaked to the skin, you can't get any wetter, get on with it. That dismissed that man. And the next man was wheeled in and said he found that he was frozen stiff. And the colonel said, the harder you work, the warmer you get, and he was dismissed. After that, I had no more complaints.
Where were you housed during this?
Well, for a fortnight, I was housed with the Americans who were in a camp further along in Cornwall, an established camp. But it's hard to believe now. The rations were so liberal that my rationed stomach wouldn't take it, and I pleaded with my colonel to release me. I said I would find it better to live in a tent on the site, and the Americans concluded that I was completely mad, but they admired my keenness.
The rest of your men were in the tents on the site?
They were in tents on the site.
This particular camp, which was for Americans, were they demanding additional buildings or additional comforts in a camp which normal British troops wouldn't have got?
The only difference, these were Nissen huts, and we built them exactly as one would supply the British Army, which of course was all we had. That was the equipment we had. And I remember when we finished the first half dozen huts, the American colonel came along to inspect them. And he looked, he walked inside, he walked up, he looked a teeny little bit shaken. And then he said to me, "But what are those holes at the gable ends?" We used to leave ventilation holes, of course. And I said, "Oh, they're ventilation holes to prevent an atmosphere building up." He said, turned to his adjutant and said, "Fill those up." And he also said, "Bring more heat." As we only had one stove in the hut. Apart from that, no, they were very... I think that they were a bit put out at the fact that the ablutions were outside, because we then had to put the ablutions inside. So he didn't complain to me, but he must have complained to higher authority. But otherwise, they were very nice people and said they were satisfied. And I was pretty proud because I actually completed within the 6 weeks. From there, I was sent back. We were stationed in Devonport. And the next job I got was one I found, it sounds strange now, erecting a water tank. That is, the tank has to be put onto a steel, what you would describe as a scaffolding. And it was for the camp below because of the number of usage of water was confined to separate times when a lot was taken away and then there was nothing. So these tanks, they were very large tanks, were filling up during the day, and then when the chaps came off parade or first thing in the morning, they had water available, which wouldn't otherwise have been readily available. But the hard thing was, it sounds singular to you possibly, if the scaffolding wasn't absolutely true, the tanks wouldn't come together because they were prefabricated. And so I'd already heard of one officer who'd been dismissed from the company, and I was most cautious that that wouldn't happen to me. Well, we were pleased then to hear that we'd been given the job of building in the hillside under Admiral's House at Devonport the combined operations headquarters for the invasion. It wasn't said that it was for the invasion, it was merely a combined operations headquarters. And we, at the time, thought it was for the Navy. This was a fascinating job from the point of view of an engineer. And I think it was given to us because Colonel Bryden had done this sort of work in America and Canada when he was building in those countries. So he was chosen, I think, for that reason. It was fascinating. I could talk about it for hours because one had, as the miners in County Durham would tell you very easily, one drives a shaft in, putting arches in and sliding the sheeting around the arches and proceed in that way. We very soon got a railway running and we worked very hard, and Colonel Bryden took over full responsibility. He did all the, he checked every level himself. He did the full survey. He wouldn't leave it to anyone. He said it was too important.
What soil were you driving through?
It was a mixed, very, very much mixed. You see, this is the trouble. There wasn't much soil. There was some clay and some marl, some rock. It was very varied. And fortunately, we had the fairly modern explosives and so weren't stuck with gun cotton, which was the curse of the British Army. Anyhow, We drove that by, it was urgent. So we formed our squadron into three shifts, 3 8-hour shifts. And we drove literally 24 hours a day, taking over. And I found it fairly simple to do the night shift. It was the late shift that I didn't care for, but it was fascinating. You can picture this large shaft going through, and then as we went along there were smaller shafts running off at right angles on each side, and they had to be arched over, and they were all insulated as well. Before we finished, it was a very, very superior job, and the signals were champing behind us, wanting to run their wiring in as soon as possible, and if possible behind, so that there wouldn't be obviously damaged. They wanted to put it behind the roofing, so it made it quite a congested effort.
What materials were you using?
Just exactly the same as one uses in a colliery, just as though we're driving a shaft in for a coal mine. And I often wished that my derms were with me at this time, because the pioneers that we had were willing, but the pioneer corps that time was very, very mixed bag, and I couldn't spare any men to do anything else but the engineering work. It was awfully difficult. However,
this was hand dug. This to go through.
Yes,
sheer physical effort.
With we had picks and the rest of it, and windy picks too. But remember, we're back now 50 years, and there wasn't the equipment one has now. We were just as though we were driving a coal mine. If you think of it that way, you can have a picture of what we were doing. Well, we'd been going on some time with this shaft, and then we got a complaint. The job was stopped. And I said to the colonel, who on earth can stop a job of this urgency? He said, it's the admiral's wife. She's complained that the blasting is shaking Admiralty House and keeping her awake. I said, it's just not possible. He said, you forget that in Devonport the admiral is God, and his wife is obviously superior. I said, what are you going to do? He said, I'm going to have a bit of fun. And he said, I want you to come with me. So we arranged to meet the admiral, his flag lieutenant, two more assistants, and the admiral's wife in the admiralty dining room, where she said the worst damage was occurring. And we went up there. It would be about 11:45, I think the appointment was made, and we went up there, and the admiral had a few words. The admiral's wife had a lot of words. And the colonel said, well, shall we carry out a simple experiment to see if there is any vibration caused by the blasting? Of course, these people had to say yes. And if you can picture, the dining room in Admiralty House is enormous, beautiful table, with beautiful furniture around and everything else. And we were two officers standing in dirty battle dress, because we'd just come from the tunnel. These gentlemen were resplendent in their uniform. And at a matter of 12:02, I wondered why the colonel had been synchronizing his watch with our people below. He took a half crown and stood it on end on the table, and we waited. I'm sure he did it deliberately over a minute, because we waited and the lady was fuming, the Admiral was looking worried, and the Colonel was, he wasn't smiling, but he did look a little bit contented. And then suddenly in the distance, very, very, very faintly in the distance, we could hear woof, 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 as the charges went off that the chaps had set in the rock. The half crown never flickered. And the Colonel picked it off the table and said, "Well, sir, I think you'll agree we could start work again." And the Admiral had to say, "Yes," with his wife standing behind him. It was a very pleasant moment for us.
Who was the Admiral?
I don't remember. no names, no pack drill. Anyhow, we drove on, and the Colonel professed himself satisfied with progress, and he had his first holiday of the war. And off he went. We carried on, obviously thinking we would crack on as far as we could whilst he was away. And regrettably, on my shift, the night shift, I heard a commotion at the face and went galloping up to see what had happened. And we'd struck the main sewer from Plymouth. And this were belting out. Mark you, it was the middle of the night, so it wasn't belting quite as much as it might have been. But it had shaken a piece down about 9-10 feet across. It had shaken it clean out. This was a challenge, as well as a shaker. And I thought, in Devonport, the only people to help me here are the Navy. So I measured the distance of the break and what bearing I could get, and I went along to the naval base, and I asked if they had a length. I think I actually got a piece, I'm not sure whether it was 12 or 14 feet long, but of channel, and the sides were up 6 inches, and the width was 12 inches by 6 inches. It was a perfect piece of channel, and you can picture us. That had to be brought by a wagon from the dockyard. Then we had to thread it up the tunnel with all this filth pouring down, and when we got it there, it had to be eased up under the unbroken part and then swung round so that we, at the given moment, we could ease it up under the part that was pouring the sewage. I can only say to you that no one's battle dress was fit to be kept afterwards. The lot, our whole clothing had to be destroyed. We worked, you can imagine, I had myself, Lance Sergeant, Corporal, there were 7 of us, and 2 Lance Corporals, I presume. We did the job rather than put the chaps into it. And we actually managed to get it underneath coming up towards dawn. And we were worried about what was going to happen next. And anyhow, we got this under, and we got packing to go around the pipe, and we packed it as far as we could and started trying to build up the sides to get it a bit higher until a length of the proper pipe could be brought to be put into position. Of course, it had to be sent for. And so for a matter of days, the sewage had to go through. We were stopped from doing the main tunnel, so of course we concentrated on finishing the others. I remember a gentleman who we nearly Well, we did. We put him under arrest. There was a civilian gentleman walking along the tunnel one day. Two of my chaps jumped him, put the rifles behind his back and frog marched him out. And I thought this was singular. He looked a very well-dressed gentleman. And to our astonishment, we found he was a Mr. Chubb, who at that time was a member of the Army Council, and he'd come to see what this hush-hush job was all about, but hadn't bothered to tell us. Could easily have been shot, because my chaps were a little bit edgy. You can imagine at that time, things were getting excited about the future.
What time are we talking about?
It would be about March 44. We were getting worried because we'd been held up by the Admiral. One or two more things had held us up and we had to get on. We were all given a deadline and it wasn't very far on at that time. Anyhow, this job was finished. We got it finished. The signals got all their equipment in. It was all lit up. It was, I must say, a picture. And the staffs were, when before we left, the staffs were coming in because we had to draw our lines up and take all the... Oh, the spoil, by the way, we put in the swimming pool at Devonport. It was straight out and just tipped it straight in. So after the war, of course, they had all the job taking that out. One rather interesting thing that happened, you can imagine the Navy were a bit put out because the Army had come into their domain. Sounds odd now, but that's the way the services work. And they came and they complained that our blasting was causing damage and likelihood of collapse of the Scott Memorial. Now, the Scott Memorial, of course, is very, very famous, and I said to the Colonel, and now how are we going to get out of this one? And he said to me, I've been wanting to show you what I did in America and Canada about moving houses. He said, we used to jack them up and shift them along the road, and I've taken them as far as 400 yards away. And I thought, I can hardly believe this, but he was so clever that I couldn't disbelieve it, and I thought, we'll wait and see. Well, he ordered 16 jacks, as well as timbering and everything else. And he set these 16 jacks round the memorial. He prepared it, of course, ready to slide in timbers. But first of all, he had to raise it to take the wherewithal to move it. And I find it hard now to remember. 16 jacks were moved 1/16th of an inch at a time. Simultaneously, he gave the signal and they were all moved, and it creak creak, and the memorial rose and rose. It was quite miraculous to me. And when we got it to the right height that he could put the runners under it, he had these slid in, and then we moved it. Let me see. Well, I know it went two directions that I can recollect, but he moved it along these directions, let it down again, built it all up round, and if you look at it, you will never, never guess that it had been moved, about 100 yards at any rate, out what was said by the Navy to be a safe spot. They thought we couldn't do it. Well, the Colonel did it.
So that's standing in its...
Still there now.
In the same spot that
still there. I saw it a matter of 4 years ago, still the same. Yes, fascinating. Another job we were given at that time was the War Office had been hit by a bomb. And strictly speaking, any government property has to be looked after by the Ministry of Works. But the War Minister had decided that he couldn't wait for the Ministry of Works to come, and through some wangle, he got our company to go up to London to repair it, just to knock the front off, which happened to so many buildings in the war. So our company moved up there to London, and we were actually stationed in Chelsea Barracks, rather fascinating place, and we set to work to repair the War Office. And it was rather interesting because it hadn't occurred to us that when there was an air raid warning, people went into shelters, that one hadn't the time to do a thing like that. So the first air raid that went, it was interesting to observe that the senior civil servants charged down to the shelters first, brought up at the rear by the typists and other clerical staff. And when the all clear went, the typists and other staff came up first, and the senior civil servants came up last. Draw your own conclusions. They must have felt that they were essential to the war effort.
Did we get the title of your particular unit?
695 Army Troops Company.
It must have been a pretty skillful unit.
Oh yes, they were all specialists. It was a splendid unit. The men were keen. The men were tradesmen. If you said that man's a joiner, he was probably a joiner who in civil life had been 10 years, had certainly served his time. Plumbers, all the other trades were represented. It was a splendid unit because we could do anything. Field companies are essentially for action in the field with the infantry, but we are there to be pulled in as required. And I've often operated in front of the field company. For instance, I built a small bridge once. But there you are.
Were you now, obviously, you're more involved in the engineering sense.
Yes.
Than in the infantry sense when you first came in.
That's right. The engine. Once we'd left the training, I had to give up all signs of the infantry. The only thing was that my particular crowd called themselves the light engineers. The next thing that we were given to do was we were then brought up to behind Portsmouth for the invasion, and we were stationed in fact in a place called Havant, Emsworth and a cow plain, which is a sort of triangle to the rear of Portsmouth. And there we had to build tented camps with ablutions and necessary services for the invasion. By that time, the area had been closed to the civil population. And this was once again very similar to Cornwall. It was a wet spring, and we had to work through it, and occasionally one wondered if the chaps were going to be in these tented camps for very long, because it wasn't very salubrious. However, we pressed on. We built an astonishing number of these camps because we were given the pioneers to level sites, and we could press on with it, the engineering work. And it was again a case of three shift work.
Is this basically laying on water and so forth?
Yes, and putting up tents, and round the tents you have to put drainage, And you've got, for the ablutions, of course, you have to make actual structures. So it was a pretty hard-going job, and non-stop. I was stationed in a little house on the front at, not Havant itself, but Waterlooville, a little place called Waterlooville. Three of us were in this requisitioned house. Sorry,